No, we have a test today. Remember? Yeah, remember? Didn't you know? Did you? You didn't? Didn't I said it was today? Oh, I hate to do that to you. If you're listening on tape, this is file number 5, People and Lands Test Introductory Information. There are some of you that didn't know that we're going to have this today. Well, okay, with that one, just don't worry about that. Put it in your notes. I'll give you the answers to that a little bit later on. So you want to really basically put everything away then.
This time I'm trying to remember to turn the maps around. I used to have a habit of passing out these tests and leaving the maps facing the crowd. But, you know, since everyone's a Christian, I never had any problems with them looking up there anyway. But just in case, everyone was always honest. I don't want to put any unnecessary temptation before anyone knows.
There are enough back there? Everyone has? Oh, a couple extras even, huh? Okay, it's basically pretty self-explanatory here.
Andres, can I see your test here for a moment?
Okay. The first part is just simply multiple choice. There's only one correct answer, and it's like that all the way through. Page 5. And then over on page 5, you know, this thing here, you would have a lot of fun on this. It's the wrong test. I was wondering. This is a test on Mesopotamia and Egypt. Now look at it, and how many have file 6? Everyone has file 5? Anyone else has file 6? You have 6 too? Okay, well, you don't want to take that one. That's too hard for you. Goodness, this is talking about what kind of weather does Egypt have, and chief god of Persia, and the wise lord, and worshipped by Zarathustra, and so forth. And, well, that'd be really tough. Are there any more extra tests back there? My, you would have had a real struggle for this hour, brother. You would have thought, that old teacher, boy.
Either my mind wandered a lot, or...
This is a lot better. That's why my mind went blank. I looked at it, and I thought, something is wrong here. see. File number five, part one is multiple choice. There's only one correct answer. And then on number three, part two, check all that apply. There's only one like that. And so therefore, every single one of them that would be correct, just put a mark beside it. And then part three, short answer, those are not essays, just a couple of words would suffice for each one of them. And that's it, not very long. Okay, you can work on that. I'll be sitting back here if you would happen to need me.
what we can do now, why don't you exchange it with your friend?
If you're listening on tape, please correct this and hand it into my box. Put it into my box, please. Okay, let's look at this then. You basically know how to correct these. Just circle the right answer, put the minus number in the margin. Notice carefully that some of the point values differ, so make sure that you subtract the proper number. Try to use a different color pen if at all possible. Multiple choice number one, what does the word geography literally mean? It means D, to right the earth. That's what it literally means. So number one is D. Number two, what description best fits the meaning of topography? It would be C, representing the surface features by drawing them on maps. So two is C. Number three, which class of Arabs today are the closest in their customs to Bible characters? It would be C, the Bedouin. The Bedouin Arabs. Number three is C. Number four, what does the word archaeology literally mean? C, word of ancient things. So number four is C. Number five, approximately when did Bible archaeology begin? D, 1800 to 1900. That's when it began, the 19th century, not that long ago. Number five is D. Number six, where did archaeological excavation begin? C, Mesopotamia. Number six is C. Number seven, what is the name of the method of excavation in which one layer of soil is removed at a time and each level of culture carefully studied? C, stratigraphy. So seven is C. Number eight, what is the approximate size of the basic Bible lands? C, 3/4 the size of the United States. Number A is C. Number nine, about what year did the flood occur? D, 2500 B.C. Nine is D. Number 10, about when did Abraham live? D, 2100 B.C. So that's D. 11, when did the Exodus from Egypt take place? E, 1450 B.C. So that's E. Number 12, when was the nation of Israel divided into northern Israel and Judah? C, 931 B.C. So that's C. Number 13, what ancient historian was a widely traveled Greek who lived from 484 to 420 B.C. and is considered the father of history? D, Herodotus. That's D. And number 14, what historian was a Jewish priest who wrote two large volumes on the history of the Jews? D, Josephus, commonly known as Flavius. That's D. Okay, part two, check all that apply. Why is archaeology important to the Bible student? Well, A should be checked. Archaeology confirms the Bible beyond question. That's really true. If you have an honest and an open heart, well then you have to acknowledge that the Bible is accurate, that there's never been anything discovered archaeologically that would ever question the accuracy of the Bible. B obviously should not be checked because the Bible doesn't have to be proven before you can believe it through archaeology. C should be checked. Archaeology often throws lights on the events, people, and situations described in the Bible. And then E should be checked. It does provide supplementary historical information. And of course, F should not be checked. Smith Wigglesworth and others like that probably didn't know very much about archaeology and probably didn't want to know very much about archaeology. Smith Wigglesworth used to say, some folks like to read their Bibles in the Greek and some in the Hebrew. I prefer to read mine in the Holy Ghost. That was kind of the cut he was coming from. Well, part three, short answer, write the correct response to each question and answer in the space provided. Point values are noted for each question. Number one, list the five bodies of water that define Bible land. Well, here's what they should be. Now, be a little lenient with their spellings. If you can see that they've got it, well, then, that's fine. Bless their hearts for trying. So, and any order, obviously. Any order. No certain order needs to be here. But one of them is the Persian Gulf. Secondly, the Caspian Sea. And they may have written like the Caspian Gulf too. I'll be a little bit lenient on that if they've got, but they do have to have the main title there, Caspian. The next one is the Black Sea, and then the Mediterranean Sea, and then the Red Sea. So the Persian Gulf, Caspian Sea, Black Sea, Mediterranean Sea, and Red Sea. Yes, Rodney. Great Sea. And do they have Mediterranean again? They don't. Yeah, that would be all right, because that's the same. Okay, any questions on that? Number two, what is the name of the large green belt shaped like a horseshoe with the Arabian Desert in its center? The Fertile Crescent. The Fertile Crescent. Yes. Mesopotamia. What is the name of the large green belt? Actually, the Fertile Crescent extends quite a ways beyond Mesopotamia. It goes all the way down through Syria, down through Lebanon, and actually Palestine is really part of the Fertile Crescent, and then it ends at Sinai. So it really is much broader than Mesopotamia. So it's true that it does go through the heart of Mesopotamia, though. But Fertile Crescent would be the right answer for that. Number three, what is the study and dating of different types of pottery called? Pottery typology. Pottery typology. If they only wrote typology, that's fine too. Now, if they wrote pottery dating, well, that really isn't the answer, because that's really what it is saying. What is pottery dating? And I've had a lot of people write pottery dating. What is pottery dating called? Pottery dating. So I have to admit, a brilliant answer, but...
Yeah. Brother, how about potty
polygy? Well, I would say maybe we should give them about 5 points for such an ambitious answer. Huh? Well, yeah, that's a nice, intriguing answer, but it's not the full answer there. It's only 1 point, you know, what's 1 point anyway? If you go out on the archaeological field and tell them that you have come to do something like that, or you're liable not to make it in this area, and I want to make sure you're trained properly here. Number four, what does the name Mesopotamia mean? Between the rivers. They may have said between the two rivers or something like that, but it means between the rivers. Between the rivers. Number five, what nation carried northern Israel away captive? It must be Assyria. So make sure they do have the A on it. Assyria. 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 And what year did this take place? 722 B.C. If they wrote, the only other plausible answer there that I've seen would be 721 B.C. And sometimes you'll see that on some maps, so I'll be lenient with that. Yeah, let's do it like that. If they wrote Assyria but then got the date wrong, then let's put it minus one. Number six, what nation carried Judah away captive? Babylon. And when did, or they might have written Babylonia, that's fine too. What year did this begin to take place? Either 605 or 606 B.C. would be perfectly fine. 605, they may have said 606. Some maps do say 606. Number seven, name the two major rivers located in Mesopotamia, the Tigris and Euphrates. Tigris and Euphrates. So there should be the minus number now up at the top. Yes.
Mm-hmm. You said that Babylonia carried Judah away.
Yes.
The last carrying away was in 586, is that right?
Yes.
Okay. Now, you mentioned something about Babylonia being in power for those 70 years.
Mm-hmm.
Is that true?
Yes. Yeah, starting from 605 or 606 and extending down to 536.
I see.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. See, that's why I wrote it
It says, what nation carried Judah away captive? What year did this begin to take place? Because if I would have said, when did this take place? Well, actually, there were three installments. It begins in 606, and then it ends up by the time you hit 586 with the destruction of the temple.
God basically just erased that. Is it like he allowed Babylon to be raised up? He used as a chasing.
He did that with both Assyria and Babylon. The Bible tells you that very thing, that he raised them up and allowed them to do that. In fact, the exact 70 years shows you that's why they were a nation. Yeah.
Was that raised up from the same way that remember when Daniel was talking about the Prince of Persia? Is that tied directly together, like the Prince of Babylon fell and the Prince of Persia was raised up?
I think so. I think that there's a spiritual battle behind the scenes that we often don't see. And that's what you're saying, that there were spiritual forces behind the scene that were, as it were... Yeah, it is. Yeah. Okay, well, what we'll do then, let's pass them. Are there any other questions on yours? Look at your test and make sure that it has been tabulated correctly. Yes.
Next one?
Yes.
The description you just did, I took the literal meaning of photography, which would be brothel, right?
Yeah.
And photography of the area, and I figured it gets you out of the right, or the region.
Because, see, this would be talking about the actual historical event. The history of the area, as far as, not the historical event so much, but, you know, that, in my opinion, is a lot more nebulous. Because really what photography did, it seems, it looks like they really knew what the answer was. Photography is actually the right place. It's representing the field. Well, it looks like you already did know the answer, really. Hi. Oh, you're right, Ted. Well, that is really a borderline, isn't it? What do you think? Do you think that's the right answer?
I thought, you know, I just put two words together. I thought,
Well, I'll tell you what. You do this. You put a question mark up at the top of your page, and I'll think about it. I'll meditate on it at church service. Yeah, right. Next thing. Yeah. Okay, now let's do this next. Well, I think it's a C. Yeah. Let's take out file number 4. Let me give you the answers to this now. You can correct your own. I would like to have you correct it exactly like what I give you, though. And it might be wise to pay attention to this. In other words, learn it well enough. So if you ever saw this test again or saw another one like it, then you might be able to... The problem that I've run into this little test is that there's a lot of names that kind of overlap when I've given this. And so therefore, it's kind of hard to correct it. It's not really fair to the student to pass it out. And they've got all these other answers. Yes. Okay, well, if you didn't do this, what you could do, if you didn't do it, go ahead and write the answers in, because we're not going to pass this in. So you can write the answers in, and you might have another chance sometime in the future. Who knows? Who knows which way the winds of fate will blow in 701 before the semester is over. But let me give you the answers, because once you've got the answers, then there's really no excuse for putting the wrong answer on sometime in the future, other than perhaps not knowing what the answer is. Well, part one, I'll read them to you and you can write them down if you have it wrong. Number one is the Persian and Gulf should be circled. Number two is the Red Sea. Number three is Aqaba Gulf. Number four is Suez Gulf.
Number five is Nile, and that's a river, of course. Number six is Tigris, and that's a river. Those are pretty easy to figure out. It's not a gulf or a sea. It's a little thin line. Number seven is Euphrates. It's a river. Number eight is Orontes, and it's a river. Number nine is Galilee. That's a sea. 10 is Jordan. That's a river. 11 is Dead. It's a sea. 12 is Mediterranean Sea. Caspian Sea for number 13. Number 14 is Black Sea. And number 15 is Propontis, and that's a sea. Propontis, that's spelled Propontis. Pretty much the way it sounds. Then part two, mountains. That's numbers 16 through 21. Number 16 is Ararat. Ararat, A-R-A-R-A-T. Number 17 is Zagros. Number 18 is Mount Hermon. 19 is Lebanon. And then 20 is Taurus. And 21 is Anti-Taurus. So Ararat, Zagros, Mount Hermon, Lebanon, Taurus, and Anti-Taurus. Okay, well, let's look at the Bible lands then. A is Egypt. B is Sinai. Number C is Canaan. D is Phoenicia. See, you could have put something very conceivably for like C, Palestine, or you know, Israel, or something like that, and that technically would have been a correct answer. But D, Phoenicia. E is Asia Minor, or the land of the Hittites, Asia Minor. That's for letter E. Letter E is Asia Minor or Hittites. And then F is Syria. F is Syria. Now, not Assyria, but rather just Syria, starting with an S for F. G is Babylon. G is Babylon. For Mesopotamia, for G? Yeah, see, that'd be another possibility. You could have put something like that, too. But actually, the correct answer that I'd like to have you have is Babylon. Then H is Assyria. See, and you could have conceivably put Mesopotamia for that as well. So H is Assyria. And then letter I is Persia. Persia. So let me go down through that again for you here. Do I need to? Okay, here's what it is. A is Egypt. B is Sinai. C is Canaan. D is Phoenicia. E is Asia Minor. F is Syria. G is Babylon. H is Assyria. And I is Persia. Yes, my friend. Could I what? Elam, yeah, see, that'd be another possibility. Although I'd like to have you, if you did write Elam down, maybe put a little line through it and just put Persia down there. And I really, we've arranged this test so many different ways. One time we had a huge list of multiple choice and select only from this list. And we've tried all kinds of methods that I can think of to come up with a test that would be foolproof. And I haven't had the wits about me to be able to come up with anything yet. That. Okay, number 10 and 11 and 12. Number 10 is Jordan, which is the river. 11 is Dead, which is a sea, and 12 is Mediterranean, which is a sea. Yes, Ashley.
For E, part 3,
mm-hmm.
Did you have Armenia?
Armenia? Actually, now, E would not really be Armenia. Armenia would actually be over in the area of almost H. Okay. Yeah, so E would be a little bit too far west.
And the other question
I have is letter H. Okay. Excuse me. Media for that? Media, that's right. Well, media would really be on the other side, like right here. See, this is about where H is on our map right here, and media is really over here.
Okay.
Yeah. So media wouldn't really be the right answer to that. Yes.
I don't know if anybody else got a little confused, but I.
No, I would suppose maybe at least one other person.
One thing that got me a little was kind of the rivers, dude.
Yes.
The way, you know,
They changed course from this map to another map or something if you looked on it. How about that? Those other maps are wrong, aren't they? This is actually what I did. I sketched this thing, and then I gave it to them assuming that they were going to correct it. And they printed it up the way I drew it. I guess you get what you ask for. Yeah. The anti-Lebanon, it is a spur of the anti-Lebanon, so for number 18, yes, but I'll tell you what, if you wrote that down, correct it and put Mount Hermon on. Because the whole reason that I'm giving you this is that if I ever give this test again, then see, you'll have all the right answers. You could study this and you know exactly what I'm driving for at. Yeah. Proponus. Aegean is actually a different sea. Proponus. Mm-hmm. Yes. One more question.
I have it.
For Assyria, for H. Well, that is one of those that would overlap, and actually, H could really be Armenia. It really could. And see, some of these territories do kind of overlap, so that's not necessarily wrong at all. But what you want to do is correct it and put Assyria. See, I would have marked that wrong if I would have just given you this test and said take it, and then if you would have said how about Armenia, I would have said fine. But now if I give it again after correcting, then it's different. Yes. How come you put media for I? For I? Well, because they do tend to overlap a little bit. And media is real close. Although media is really the northern part right below the Caspian Sea there. Media is actually a little bit north of Persia. So the one that you could easily confuse it with is Elam, because those are in the same place. With Elam and Persia. Because what happened, Persia grew and took over Elam, is what happened. And then it also took over Media, and also Mesopotamia, and also Asia Minor, eventually. Well, okay, we're done with this. So you can keep that for your reference. You might want to periodically look at that and make sure that your memory is refreshed. We're talking about world powers in Bible times. Let's talk about Babylon. I've got some more things to tell you about Babylon. We're talking about two great periods of history, and we discussed briefly the ancient golden age. And then we didn't really start the Neo-Babylonian Empire, did we? We didn't really talk about that, did we? Well, the second great period of Babylonian history is what is called the Neo-Babylonian Empire. Now, if it's kind of confusing to you as to exactly when these empires became prominent and when the other empire subsided, what you might want to consider doing is getting this chronological chart that we have in the bookstore. I don't have it with me today, but it's by Whitcomb. And it's actually a glossy chart, and I think it costs a couple dollars, but it shows all these ancient empires, and it gives the dates on them, and it also has the emperors that were over those empires. And maybe if I can remember, I'll bring mine tomorrow. But the Neo-Babylonian Empire, and this lasted from 606 to 536 B.C. 606 to 536 B.C. So this is really 1,000 years later than after Hammurabi's empire. And the kingdom of Hammurabi did not come into contact much with Bible history. And this period of Babylonian history is the time that really comes into contact with biblical history. It existed for only a short period of time. This is the empire that broke the power of Assyria. You see, there were two world powers before Babylonia became a world power. There was Egypt and then Assyria. And the Babylonians broke the power of Assyria. And then, in its westward sweep, it also destroyed Judah and conquered the land of Egypt as well. There was one king that was the primary principal ruler. His name was Nebuchadnezzar. And I'll be writing his name down on the board here in a few minutes. Let me give you a brief historical sketch of the Neo-Babylonian Empire, and I'm going to make this real brief. Basically, all I'm going to do is list the six primary kings and give the dates of them.
To you. Very interesting names here. Number one is Nabopolassar.
Yeah.
Nabopolassar. And Nabopolassar lived, or I should say reigned, now. These are actually their reigns, not the time in which they lived. From 626 to 605 B.C.
Nabopolassar, that's spelled N-A-B-O-P-O-L-A-S-S-A-R, from 626 to 605 B.C. And so, really, there were 300 years of long Assyrian supremacy in which Assyria was a major world power, and then all of a sudden, Nabopolassar became the king of Babylon. And when he became the king of Babylon, he threw off the yoke of Assyrian supremacy over him, and he was warring against the Assyrians, and he actually established the independence of the city of Babylon and was able to do that. He was able to battle against the Assyrians and able to throw off their yoke. And then he joined forces with a couple of other individuals. One of them was a man called Cyaxares the Mede. If I don't write their names down on the board, don't worry about it. I wouldn't ask you a test question on it. But with the aid of Cyaxares the Mede, he conquered and destroyed the capital of Assyria called Nineveh in 612 B.C. And so really the significant thing with him then is he is the first one to really rebel against the Assyrians and actually battle against them and get somewhere with them. They were a very strong, a very powerful nation at this time, Assyria was. And so Nabopolassar started warring against them, and then his son, Nebuchadnezzar, became the commander of his father's armies, and Nabopolassar kind of recedes and fades in the background, and this next king, Nebuchadnezzar, became a co-regent with his father and eventually the next emperor. So that's Nebuchadnezzar. And of course, Nebuchadnezzar is mentioned much in the Bible. Some of these other kings are not mentioned, but this one is. And he reigned from 605 to about 562 B.C. And that is spelled N-E-B-U-C-H-A-D-N-E-Z-Z-A-R. And that's from 605 to 562. He was the greatest of all the ancient Babylonian kings, the most powerful of them all, one of the mightiest monarch of all times. You'll notice on the dates on the board, he reigned about 44 years, a very long period of time. The Babylonian Empire was largely the fruit of his efforts. In other words, for that 44 years, he was the one that pretty much welded the Babylonian Empire into what it became later as the greatest of all the empires in the world at that time. He extended the power of Babylon over the most of the then known world. In other words, it started off as just a little town down here, the city of Babylon, became the kingdom of Babylonia, and then spread all throughout Asia Minor, and went all the way down into Palestine, all the way down into Egypt, and all the way up into Asia Minor. So that was the then known world. He also was the one that carried the Jews into captivity for their Babylonian captivity. He was really instrumental in doing that, including the men of God such as Ezekiel and Daniel, those prophets. He is the one that carried them into captivity. Took a great liking to Daniel and made Daniel one of his chief advisors. He also beautified the city of Babylon almost beyond description. In fact, I'll give you some statistics and facts and figures that archaeologists have since ascertained about it. It's really incredible, the city that he built. It's actually almost unbelievable, really, when you look at it. Then there's a third king, and his name is Evil-Merodach. Evil-Merodach. And he reigned from 562 to about 560. And, of course, all these are B.C., so I don't really need to keep writing that down. Evil-Merodach, that's spelled E-V-I-L-M-E-R-O-D-A-C-H, from 562 to 560. He is mentioned a couple times in the Bible. We read of Evil-Merodach in 2 Kings, chapter 25 and verse 27, and also Jeremiah, chapter 52 and verse 31. So those scriptures, 2 Kings 25, 27, and so forth. He didn't last very long, though. You can see from the dates, only about 2 years. He was put to death by a number of conspirators that were they were involved in a conspiracy to try to somehow capture the throne. And it was headed by a man called Nergal-Sar. And this man, Nergal-Sar, was actually the husband of a daughter of Nebuchadnezzar. So he was really a shirt-tail relative of this man called Evil-Merodach. And so he lasted about 2 years. And then the next king was Nergal-Sar. So he was the one that was actually
instrumental in putting to death evil Merodach. His name is spelled like this. The Riglathar reigned from 560 to about 556. And old Neriglathar's name is spelled N-E-R-I-G-L-I-S-S-A-R, 560 to 556. He's mentioned in Jeremiah chapter 39 and verse 3, and then Jeremiah chapter 39 and verse 13. However, there he is called Nergal-Shalrezer, and I'll let you look in there for the spelling of that. I won't take the time to spell it. He reigned for about 4.5 years, and then Neriglathar bit the dust. He died. And then next of all, there was another king called Labashi-Marduk. I'm not making up these names. Labashi-Marduk. Most of these are Babylonian gods, these names. They would name their kings after the gods. And he reigned from 556 to 556. In other words, he lasted only a couple of months. He was a young boy. He was a young boy, and he was clubbed to death just a few months later, so he wasn't around too long. And then there was one final king, and that's the sixth king, and that's a king called Nabonidus. And that's, I'll write his name over here. He is the final king, Nabonidus, and Nabonidus ruled from 556 to about 536. And he also reigned with his son called Belshazzar. So there were really two reigning at the same time. Nabonidus, spelled N-A-B-O-N-I-D-U-S, from 556 to 536, was the final king of Babylon. And then his son, Belshazzar, spelled B-E-L-S-H-A-Z-Z-A-R, was a co-regent with him. That is, they ruled at the same time. And they were reigning over Babylon in different areas. Nabonidus was a warrior, and he would spend a lot of his time out in the battlefields. And meanwhile, Belshazzar was back in the city of Babylon. Of course, he's the one that we read about in the book of Daniel, which we're going to look at possibly tomorrow. And eventually, the Babylonians were defeated by the Persians. And so I wanted to give you just a real brief outline of these primary kings. Now, if you're wondering, well, would I have to know all these for a test? No, you wouldn't. You wouldn't have to know all of them. Really, the only one that you would really want to be concerned about is maybe Nebuchadnezzar and then maybe Belshazzar. Those would be the two. And so all the others are just really incidental kings. And okay, well, we've got some real interesting things to say about the Empire of Babylon itself. We'll talk about that tomorrow. What's that? By the Persians.